News of a milestone, renewables have edged ahead of coal for the first time since the Grover Cleveland administration. For non-students of history, it's been a long time. I'm David Brancaccio. 135 years ago, coal was not king, and the U.S. got more of its energy from renewables, hydropower, wood. There's new data now showing renewable energy has, after all these years, edged past coal again in America. Here's Marketplace's Nova Safo.
Americans achieved a key milestone last year in our energy consumption. Coal-based energy use fell 15%, while renewable energy, such as from solar and wind, grew 1%. The newly released figures from the Energy Information Administration mean that more energy was consumed from renewable sources than from burning coal. That's not happened since 1885. But it was expected to happen. For the last decade, coal use for electricity generation has been in rapid decline with the emergence of cheaper alternatives such as plentiful natural gas and falling costs for solar and wind power. Coal use has declined despite the Trump administration's efforts to prop up the industry. Electric utilities are increasingly switching to solar and wind sources. Last year, coal-based energy consumption dropped for the sixth year in a row, and there are indications it's declined even further during the pandemic shutdown. I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Overnight, Twitter put a special label on a tweet from President Trump about the Minneapolis unrest, with Twitter saying the Trump tweet violated its policy about glorifying violence. It was a warning from Trump the authorities could shoot looters. The tweet is still visible to Twitter users who click on it. Trump this morning, again using Twitter, said, regulate Twitter if they're going to start regulating free speech. Quote, repeal Section 230 with two exclamation points. After Twitter this week put fact-check links on some earlier Trump tweets, the White House responded with an executive order to try to remove some legal protections for social media companies. Section 230 of a 1996 law. Politicians and some activists have long sought to change that section. Here's my colleague, Molly Wood, host of Marketplace Tech.
If you were a website that had comments or let people post pictures, you could be sued out of existence if one of those things was copyrighted or defamatory. And without Section 230, the internet as we know it would not exist. That is not an overstatement. Google, Tumblr, MySpace, now Facebook or Twitter or YouTube all depend on this protection to build their business models. I spoke to Jeff Kossoff. He wrote a book about Section 230, and he told me we have no idea what the internet might look like without this regulation. We have never had that. Platforms might either censor everything for fear of getting sued, and that would undermine the free speech argument that's at the heart of this executive order, or platforms might just say, we're not touching anything for fear of getting sued, and then the speech problem that these platforms have been trying to moderate would get completely out of hand.
You can expect lawsuits to try to block that new executive order. Monday's the first of the month, the time the rent is often due. And while unemployment benefits and federal stimulus money may help, this is a time when many cannot pay. Some states and localities are preventing landlords from evicting non-paying tenants right now, but landlords may themselves owe money for mortgages. Sonia Paul reports from Richmond, California, east of San Francisco.
Angelica Lara is a landlord who owns two units in a duplex. She's speaking to one of her tenants, Jennifer Ortega.
What would be an amount you guys are comfortable paying? And I ask that with the understanding that I don't have the luxury to waive rent. I can postpone rent.
Ortega says she lost her job as a server in a restaurant in San Francisco back in March. She, her mom, and her grandma rent a three-bedroom unit from Laura for $2,450 a month.
We also need food on the table.
Ortega wound up paying most of April's rent after she received unemployment, and she wasn't sure when she would be able to pay May's rent. Even though they rent below market rates, Ortega says the current crisis aggravates an existing problem.
You know, without all this pandemic going on, it's already hard to come up with rent.
Laura and her husband use the rent money to pay their mortgage, which is $2,500 a month for both units. They also use the rental money for upkeep on the property and for income. It took weeks to connect with their bank, Bank of the West, to figure out how to pay their mortgage if rent isn't coming in. In the end, Laura and her husband decided to take a 90-day forbearance offered on their rental property's Fannie Mae loan.
It feels like a temporary solution, but it's like a Band-Aid for a gunshot wound, you know?
Most small landlords and property owners have an incentive to work out repayment plans as more and more tenants lose work, says Sid Lucky Reddy. He's president of the California Rental Housing Association.
Rents are going to be dropping out there, and you don't want to be in a competitive marketplace to find a good resident again.
Laura says she feels for her tenants and is uncertain about the future. California's governor has said he will keep a moratorium on evictions until 90 days after he declares an end to the current emergency.
I don't know how it helps in the long run if people are faced with making this big balloon payment after 90 days.
Laura says she's hoping her tenants who can't afford to pay full rent will be able to make up what they owe starting in July. In Richmond, California, I'm Sonia Paul for Marketplace.
New York and New Jersey's Lincoln Tunnel was built during the Great Depression, and with this new economic crisis causing a need to find work for people, many city, state, and local governments are renewing their push to improve infrastructure. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo met with President Trump this week with an infrastructure shopping list, new transit tunnels for New York, a train to LaGuardia, if you can believe it, and more. But is the heat of a crisis the time to greenlight the sort of projects that have to make sense for decades? Adi Tomer leads the Metropolitan Infrastructure Initiative at Brookings. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, David.
So what do you think? Spending now during a deep economic contraction, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, overall it does. You know, the Keynesian style folks would say as the economy moves towards a recession and all signs point towards a relatively sustained one, the government stepping in, stimulating demand in the marketplace, in particular for purchase of everything from steel to concrete to, of course, actually employing folks could be extremely helpful. And infrastructure can hit all those notes at once, but it really depends on what we're building, where we're building it, and at what point of the kind of economic cycle we're trying to execute that spending.
But you have a view that places like New York and really the country more generally have to be careful about making long-term decisions in this crisis situation?
Yeah, so the interest rates are absolutely fantastic. That's certainly one of the benefits to investing right now. One of the challenges of thinking of infrastructure as supercharging the economy during this, at least current recession, is that folks working in retail and hospitality and other kind of leisure activities, they're the folks that are really struggling right now, but they're not necessarily best suited to take on construction and other infrastructure-related occupations. So this is not a place that we're going to be able to supercharge employment in this exact moment. So if we're going to make investments for the future, we shouldn't necessarily feel like we're in a rush unless we know exactly which projects we want to build.
Adi Tomer leads the Brookings Institution's Metropolitan Infrastructure Initiative. Mr. Tomer, thank you.
Thank you.
And the federal government's preferred method for delivering stimulus money is through direct deposit, but 4 million are getting the money in the mail as a prepaid debit card marked Money Network Cardholder Services. Careful, those can look like junk. The IRS is now urging people to look out for the cards. A Florida CBS affiliate had the sad tale of the husband who cut up the $1,200 card into little tiny pieces, thinking it was one of those fake things luring you into more credit. I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.